feeling selfish, tired of feeling restless, tired of feeling down, nine times out of... Is that enough filler, Harlow? All right, cool. Hi, everybody. I'm Alexa, and that was 9 out of 10 by Jeff Rosenstock. And I think I'm going to quit my podcasting career and start singing you guys music. What is happening? This is the Corn Podcast. This episode's coming out super late because coronavirus got me depressed. Welcome back to another episode of the Quarantine series. This is episode 2, and I'm going to get back to our roots. And it ain't my fault that I got you feeling loose. Gotta blame it on the goose. Gotta blame it on our roots. Thank you, Lizzo, for giving me the idea for that song. We're the Corn Podcast. I am sitting in a lit closet because I got my extension cord back. I got my lamp working. I miss Harlow so dearly. It's very hard doing this by myself. And I hope you guys enjoy this article that was half copied and pasted from Wikipedia. And the rest of the news sources are local news sources. Let me tell you guys about these local news sources. All right. One of them is ABC News from Kilgore, Texas. I'm not good at that accent. Don't even know what it is. All right, guys, here we go. Harlow, are you ready to Eddie? Oh my God. I'm the funniest person. All right, guys, let's get serious. Stop laughing and get serious, class, because I got some murders to tell you about. In fact, a really fucking sad one. This is the KFC murders, and they took place in Kilgore, Texas. Spoiler alert. They took place. Actually, they didn't take place at a KFC. What? Mary Tyler, Opie Hughes, Joey Johnson were on duty at the Kentucky Fried Chicken in Kilgore on the night of September 23rd in 1983. David Maxwell was an employee who was just off duty that was kind of hanging out. And Monty Landers was there for to visit Johnson also, as they were all closing up the store. Just before the restaurant closed, an armed robbery took place, and the victims were taken to a secondary location 14 miles from the KFC, a nearby field off of County Road 232. Each of the victims were shot execution style to the back of the head, and one of the victims was found a short distance from the others, and she had actually been sexually assaulted. That was Opie Hughes. The bodies were actually initially found by an oil field worker, and then the police were called. When the police were called there was a classic turf war between Russ County and Gregg County, and this resulted in the Texas Ranger Captain G.W. Brooks to oversee the investigation. This turf war resulted in Texas Ranger Captain G.W. Brooks to oversee this investigation. The case had no solid leads for 12 years. They did have a couple. They had Jimmy Mankins, and then they had Darnell Hartsfield and Romeo Pinkerton that were also on this list, but Pinkerton and Hartsfield were actually shown to be in jail. So the police kind of set their sights on Jimmy Mankins Jr., and he is the son of a Texas state representative, and he also had prior drug convictions. The case against Mankins was mostly super shaky. They didn't have a whole lot of evidence. It was 1983. I think by 1995 was when they started pursuing Mankins, and it was a shaky case. They found a fingernail on the waistband of one of the victim's pants waistbands. They also heard that Mankins was boasting around town about the murder, but the police think that it was to gain clout with drug dealers. Mankins was actually cleared and ended up having to serve 6 months in jail while being held for trial, and eventually he was actually arrested again for another unrelated crime. And it wouldn't be until 2005. Now, remember, this took place in 1983, so it wouldn't be until 2005 that the case would become solved, would be on the way to solving. I kind of wanted to get you guys a little feel of the night instead of just here's what happened. They were dead. So what happened was that afternoon, David Maxwell, the employee who was off duty, had driven his motorcycle with his wife, Lena Maxwell, to go pick up Joey Johnson. But he was kind of oh shit, LOL, I can't have three people on this motorcycle. So he turned around and, thank God, dropped his pregnant wife, Lena, off at home. Less than an hour after he drops off Lena, he and four others are believed to have been confronted by two gun-toting intruders who came through the back door. A confrontation ensued, and a trail of Tyler's blood, that's Mary Tyler, could be found in the manager's back office and by the serving counter, and investigators theorized that she had gotten punched in the mouth or maybe the nose, and somehow the suspects got the victims into some car, and there's Mary, Opie, Joey, Monty, and David. That's five people plus the two intruders, so that's seven people they managed to get into this car and drive them 14 miles away from this KFC, and like they drove them out to Russ County and were the 14 miles away from the KFC, and they were lined up and shot, and Hughes attempted to flee what's Opie, and she wasn't successful, which is why she was found further away from the other victims. And then in 2005, two of the men who had already been on police's radar in the beginning, and they were already in prison for other crimes, were charged. It was Darnell Hartsfield and Romeo Pinkerton. And apparently, whatever police had initially thought of these two, it incorrectly showed that they in the system that they were still in prison whenever they weren't. So one of their lead that they had in 1995, maybe even sooner in 1983, was misreported, and the two guys didn't get caught. In 2005, so many years later, they charged the cousins, Darnell Hartsfield and Romeo Pinkerton. And at the time of the arrest, Hartsfield was actually serving a life sentence for aggravated perjury in connection with the case. And they were both charged with capital murder and could have received a death penalty if convicted. And so this is kind of from Wikipedia, just to tell you about what's going on with the case, is jury selection in Pinkerton's trial began on August 6, 2007 and completed on September 27, 2007. And Pinkerton's death penalty trial was scheduled to start on October 15th. And he pleaded guilty to five lesser counts on first-degree murder on October 29th and received five concurrent life sentences as part of his plea deal. Gotta love those plea deals. Hartsfield was convicted at a trial in Bryan, Texas, and sentenced to five consecutive life sentences. And there's a theory here, because DNA evidence taken from Opie Hughes' body indicated that she had been sexually assaulted, as previously mentioned. However, the DNA didn't match that of Hartsfield, Pinkerton, Mankins, or any other suspect that investigators had. This leads investigators to kind of think that maybe there's a third man. No one's come forward, and neither of the two convicted have, said anything about a third person. They won't reveal the identity of any accomplice. And as of 2015, the Rangers are still invested in the case and searching for a third person. And I wish Harlow was here, because I know we could scream about it together, but it's hard to scream by yourself, because this is 22 years that this case took to get solved because something wasn't reported correctly or something fell through the cracks. So if you or anyone you know were at a KFC in 1983 in Kilgore, Texas, and saw seven people getting, or five people getting forced into a car, then, or maybe even eight people, then maybe it's time to come to the police, because you know it's never too late. But yeah, that's the KFC murders in Kilgore, Texas. And I have to meet with my therapist via webcam. Thank you, fucking coronavirus. So I will return. And it's to you, it's going to sound like I was sitting here at this table in my closet talking in your ear the whole time. So my thoughts aren't going to be connected, because there's going to be like an hour between these two recording sessions. But yeah, stay tuned for the next. Hopefully I can get 15 more minutes out of this shit. Harlow, don't edit anything, because we're going to keep it in. We need me giving you instructions, because they're going to feel like you're not here if I don't talk to you. What's up, Harlow? How's it going? Answer here.
Dead air.
All right, everybody. I'll be back.
2 hours later.
Okay, guys, I'm back from an amazing session virtually with my amazing therapist, and I decided in therapy that I'm just gonna talk about the goddamn Titanic because that shit's cool as fuck. And we all know about it, and I don't have to like give you guys a whole lot of background, but I found this super kick-ass like Ranker article about like survivors talking about their accounts of what happened on the Titanic. And for those of you that don't know what the Titanic is, go ahead and pause this, pop in those two VHSs of that James Cameron film, Titanic, and you'll just fall in love with it. Anyway, so the Titanic was a luxury vessel and the largest movable man-made object of its time. It sank on April 15th, 1912, off the coast of Newfoundland in the North Atlantic. Over 1,500 people of the 2,240 passenger and crew lost their lives in the disaster. So the timeline of the Titanic goes as follows. Bear with me here. In July 29th of 1908, the design for the Titanic was approved. In March 31st of 1909, the keel of the Titanic was laid. May 31st, 1911, the hull of the Titanic was successfully launched. January 1912, 16 wooden lifeboats were fitted on the board of the Titanic. March the 31st of 1912, the fitting of the Titanic was completed. April 2nd of 1912, the Titanic began its sea trials. April 3rd of 1912, it arrived in Southampton. At April 10th, from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m., passengers arrived in the Southampton and began boarding the ship, not aborting the ship. And April 10th, 1912, around noon, the Titanic set sail and began her maiden voyage. April 10th, 1912, at 18:30, which is 8 minus 2 is 6, 6:30 p.m., the Titanic reached Cherbourg, France. So none of the ways I said that was right, and picked up more passengers. April 11th of 1912 at 11:30 a.m., the Titanic reached Queenstown, Ireland. I apologize. It appears that the DoorDash driver is here for my mom. The 12th and 13th of April 1912, the Titanic sailed through calm waters. April 14th, 1912, throughout the day, 7 iceberg warnings were received. April 14th at 11:40 p.m., lookout Frederick Fleet spotted an iceberg dead ahead. The iceberg struck the Titanic on the starboard or the right side of her, the starboard right side of her bow. At 11:50 p.m., water had poured in and risen 14 feet in the front part of the ship. April 15th at 12 a.m., the captain was told the ship could only stay afloat for a couple of hours. He gave the order to call for help over the radio. April 15th, 12:05 a.m., the orders were given to uncover the lifeboats and get the passengers and crew ready on deck. There was only room in lifeboats for half of the estimated 2,227 on board. On the 15th, also, 12:25 a.m., the lifeboats began being loaded with women and children first. The Carpathia, southeast of the Titanic by 58 miles, picked up a distress call and began sailing to rescue passengers. 12:45 a.m., the first lifeboat was safely lowered away. Although it could carry 65 people, it was left with 28 on board. The first distress rocket was fired. 8 rockets were fired throughout the whole night. At 2:05 a.m., the last lifeboat left the ship, and there were now over 1,500 people left on the ship. The tilt of the Titanic's deck grew steeper and steeper. At 12:17 a.m., the last radio message was sent. The captain announced every man for himself. At 12:20 a.m., the Titanic's broken off stern settled back into the water, becoming more level for a few moments. Slowly it filled with water and tilted its end high into the air before sinking into the sea. People in the water slowly froze to death. 3:30 a.m., Carpathia's rockets were spotted by the survivors. At 4:10 a.m., the first lifeboat was picked up by the Carpathia. I really hope I'm saying that right. At 8:50 a.m., the Carpathia left the area and bound for New York. She had on board 705 survivors of the Titanic disaster. At 9 p.m. on April 18th, the Carpathia arrived in New York. On April 19th to May 25th, American inquiry into the disaster was held. And then April 22nd to the 15th of May, several ships were sent to the disaster site to recover bodies. A total 328 bodies were found floating in the area. And May 2nd to July 3rd, the British Board of Trade inquiry into the disaster was held. So that's just like a quick little timeline of what happened on the Titanic, we all know. And so I found some really cool survivor quotes that I wanted to read to you guys. Here we go. This one is by the Navatril orphans, and they share their father's last words. It said, "After the ship struck the iceberg, Navratil regretted the terrible surprise that awaited their mother. One of his sons, Michael J., remembered his father's final word. My child, when your mother comes for you, as she surely will, tell her that I loved her dearly and still do. Tell her I expected her to follow us so that we might all live a happy life together in peace and freedom of the new world." Here's a really cool one about a third class passenger recalling like the locked passageways. It says, "We rowed away quickly, watching our ship slide beneath the surface of the water. The screams of those in the water were horrible. I remember calling over and over again, 'Peko, Peko, I am here, come this way.' It was cold out on the lifeboat, and I wasn't wearing warm clothes. I didn't know if I was falling asleep or freezing to death, but I drifted into unconsciousness. Soon after that, it was daylight, and we could see the ship in the distance. We would be rescued and made warm. Once aboard the Carpathia, the passengers and crew did their best to console us. We were given clothes, food, and hot coffee. But with all we were given, I was still lacking. I slowly realized the last words I might ever hear from my husband were, 'I'm going to see what has happened.' I remember standing at the railing for hours, looking out in the open sea, hoping upon hope that I would discover just one more lifeboat." This is sad. This is another survivor named Helen Churchill Candy, and it says, "A group of stokers, which are steam engine workers, fleeing the water-filled decks below appeared. Each face reflected the sight he had seen, the sight of coming death. Each knew what the passengers did not know. All of a sudden, the junior officer who led them gave a short, 'Halt!' and the men did as they were told, turned around, and went back below to their deaths. I looked with profound admiration at the descending calm of men who could courageously relinquish their life. Annie McGowan, who was 15 at the time, was traveling with her aunt from Ireland to New York. She gave her first interview of the tragedy at age 86. It says, 'Women wouldn't leave their husbands. They were screaming, and I could hear gunshots in the background. Apparently, some of the men had tried to dress like women in order to be rescued, and they were shot.' She recalls men begging to get into her own lifeboat. They said, 'Let me in, or I'll tip the whole lifeboat.' Of course, we had to let them in." Laura Mabel Francatelli is a 30-year-old secretary from London, and she described the arrival of the Carpathia, and it says, "Oh, at daybreak, when we saw the lights of that ship about 4 miles away, we rode like mad and passed icebergs like mountains. At last, about 6:30, the dear Carpathia picked us up. Our little boat was like a speck against that giant. Then came my weakest moment. They lowered a rope swing, which was awkward to sit on, with my life preserver around me. They hauled me up by the side of the boat. Can you imagine swinging in the air over the area? I shut my eyes and clung tight, saying, 'Am I safe?' At last, I felt a strong arm pulling me onto the boat." Ruth Becker was 12 years old when she rode on the Titanic in second class with her family. Many years later, she described the strange, terrible beauty of the ship as it slipped beneath the water. "The night was so dark. No moon. It was very dark. Black night. And the boat was just beautiful. All the lights on the boat were on, and it was just a beautiful sight. It was going down quietly, and the lights were going underwater as it went down. I remember that very plainly, as it was a beautiful sight and a terrible sight, as we could see the boat was going down." This is Elizabeth Schutz, who was 40 at the time. She's talking about, like, the fiasco of the lifeboats. It says, "Our men knew nothing about the position of the stars, hardly how to pull together. Two oars were soon overboard. The men's hands were too cold to hold on. Then across the water swept that awful wail, the cry of those drowning people. In my ears I heard, 'She's gone, lads. Row like hell, or we'll get the devil of a swell.'" This is the saddest thing. Passengers who were rescued on the Carpathia arrived in New York City a few days after and began their anxious search for loved ones. Charlotte Collier, a second-class passenger who was 31 years old, described the search for her husband. "There was scarcely anyone who had not been separated from their husband, child, or friend. I had a husband to search for, a husband whom, in the greatest of my faith, I had believed would be found in one of the boats, and he was not there." A lot of my information, especially this like super great timeline, came from History on the Net. It's amazing. And I think Scott Michael Rank is the one who wrote this. It's just like the coolest thing. I've actually haven't read about the Titanic since I was like 10. But yeah, whenever I ran into these quotes on Ranker, I was like shocked. I had never seen them before. But also, just so, in case you guys are a little rusty on like the girth of the Titanic, I found like a list of the amenities from the same person who wrote this awesome article on History on the Net. The amenities, there was the crow's nest, which is where Frederick Fleet and Reginald Lee spotted the iceberg that would eventually sink the Titanic, there was the officers' quarters, and they're located just below the boat deck so they could quickly reach the bridge in case of an emergency. And Captain Smith retired to the officers' quarters about an hour before the ship hit the iceberg. There was the bridge, and the bridge was a place where the ship was operated from. There was always a senior officer in the bridge, and it was First Officer Murdoch who ordered the Titanic hard a starboard when the iceberg was spotted. There's the first class grand staircase. The first two class staircases were very grand indeed. Over the top were glass domes, which allowed sunlight to pass through, which I think is like that really amazing scene with Leonardo DiCaprio. Is it Kate Winslet? Am I totally wrong? In the Titanic. There's the Marconi or the wireless room. The two wireless operators, Harold Bride and John Phillips, were employed to send telegrams on behalf of the passengers. They also received and sent messages to other ships. It was here that the message and warning of icebergs were received on the afternoon of the 14th in April, and the SOS messages were sent whenever it was realized the Titanic would sink. There's a gymnasium in this thing. I didn't know that. The gymnasium held all the latest exercise equipment, bicycle, a rowing machine, an electronic horse, and separate sessions were available for men, women, and children. This place was bougie, like the best cruise ever. Well, I guess not. They had first-class staterooms. They were luxuriously furnished with curtained beds and tables and chairs, and the most expensive had their own private balcony, which is wild. There's an a la carte restaurant, and they serve the finest food, and passengers could reserve tables and book areas for private parties. There's a first-class smoking room, and it was open for most of the day, and passengers could purchase the most luxurious cigarettes and tobacco here. There's the Cafe Parisien. I'm probably saying that right. It was designed to look like a Paris street cafe, and all of the waiters were French. Fucking wildin. There's a third class smoking room, and it was one of the leisure rooms provided, obviously, for the third class. They had second class staterooms, and they were occupied for up to four people. By the standards of the day, they were luxurious with mahogany furniture and linoleum floors. They had refrigerated cargo, a second class dining room. They had a first and second class galley, a first class dining room that could fit up to 500 people. There was a third class dining room, which is also another amazing scene in the Titanic where they're dancing on the tables and it's beautiful. And then the boilers, and the Titanic had 24 boilers each containing six furnaces and five boilers containing three furnaces. The coal was burned in the boilers to power the ship, and the steam and smoke was released through four funnels. But yeah, it's super kick-ass. Bruce Ismay of the White Star Line hoped that the Titanic would make the fastest ever crossing from Southampton to New York. They had, like, a Turkish bath in this thing. They had a first-class elevator. There was swimming pools, which I know, like, you guys are like, okay, Alexa, I've been on a cruise, but you have to remember that this is 1912. This is crazy. The Titanic had a post office in it. It's insane. Absolutely insane. They had Fireman's Passage. They had all kinds of really crazy stuff. I found a list of like who was on board, like the total count. And so the total passengers were 1,316. Total crew was 913. There were 175 first-class men, 144 first-class women, 6 first-class children. There were 100, and then 57 of the first-class men survived. 140, so only 4 first-class women died, and 5 first-class children survived. In the second class, 168 men were second class, 93 women, and 24 children. And so the second class survived were 14 men, 80 women, and 24 children. And then in third class, which is truly the most tragic, was 462 men were on board, 165 women were on board, and 79 children. And then of their surviving, it was 75 men, 76 women, and 27 children. The crew that was on board, it says that it was 23 women, and none of them survived. It didn't have a count for the men, but it is saying that total crew is 913. But yeah, it's really crazy. And like, apparently, like it says here, like many, I also saw on this that many people are taught in the sinking of the Titanic that the third class passengers were locked into floating passages so as to preserve lifeboats for the first class. Most famously in the Titanic, the film I keep referencing, dramatic embellishment definitely occurred, but the fact remains that first class passengers were more likely to survive than second or third class. So in terms of like percentages, 37% of all passengers survived, 61% of first class, 42% of second class, and 24% of third class people. But yeah, it's absolutely nuts. And I thought this was kind of interesting. I know I'm just kind of throwing facts at you about the Titanic, but this is something that I know that we all know a little bit about, but it's insane that, I don't know, to me, it's just crazy that this like giant boat that was supposed to be unsinkable and it was like a marvel of its fucking time. Like it's like today's Carnival Cruise. Like, could you imagine if a Carnival Cruise fucking split in half and went fucking right down to the bottom of the ocean? It's crazy. But yeah, that's all I'm going to bring to you guys today. I got you facts. I got you more history facts after a therapy appointment via webcam. My throat hurts and my laptop's about to die. So I'm going to hit you with the follow us at The Corn Pod on Instagram. That's TheCornPod. And submit your ghost stories, your scary stories, your true crime stories, your creepy crawly stories to The Corn Pod on our website, and that's TheCornPod, and the submission form's right there on the front page. Harlow works so hard on that submission box, and we've gotten one in, guys. Everything else you guys are sending via Harlow, but we'd really appreciate it if you guys could get that into our inbox so we can organize it. And next week, we're actually going to be reading your stories on air. And by we, I mean probably I. But yeah, thank you guys. You guys have a wonderful weekend, and stay strong in this social isolation that we're having, and just pretend I'm sitting across the table from you, okay? I love you, and I wish you wouldn't have gotten me carnations. I prefer a daisy or a rose, or maybe even like a viney plant, but the carnations are pretty. I like them. We can make them change colors with food coloring, so I guess that's fine. But just next time, you know. It was supposed to be a date. That was the joke. Anyway, you guys have a wonderful weekend. Stay strong. Keep your crafts going. Go roller skating. I love you. Goodbye. 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 9 times out of 10, I'll be stoned on the subway. You wanna fade this out? Reading backlit directives and what I should do. Alright, bye guys.